The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Today, I'm here with the CEO and co-founder of Une Femme Wines. It is Jen Pelka. Jen, thanks so much for being a part of the pod.
Hi, thanks for having me.
By the way, I apologize. At some point, my voice is going to get raspy. I'm going to sound like Tom Waits if Tom Waits was really uncool. So it's going to be uncool Tom Waits in about 9 minutes from now. Before we get into your current venture, let's actually, I'd love to hear about just some of your past running some super cool champagne bars. And I thought about this because this is a podcast, people can't see this, but you got a really cool background behind you.
Yeah, thanks. So I had two champagne bars, one in San Francisco and one in New York in the West Village, both called The Riddler. Riddling is actually a step in the champagne making process. And I launched these two awesome, really, really beautiful corner restaurants / champagne bars in my two favorite cities. And they were a huge hit. It was a ton of fun. We had a good run. We unfortunately closed both because of COVID, but we met an incredible community of folks who love drinking champagne and sparkling wines. And, you know, sometimes when one door closes, another one opens. And so now we've got a wine brand that we spend all of our time on.
Yep.
And, but it all really started at the Riddler.
How much do people not realize what COVID did to the hospitality industry?
It, you know, we've never seen anything like it, and I hope we never see it again. In the States, we were very lucky because most restaurants got a lot of aid from the government, which was incredibly helpful, obviously. But still, there were restaurants that didn't make it through, and a lot made the hard business decision that we did, which was we just couldn't really see a way out, and we decided that it was the right time to close. Unfortunately, you know, when you are forced to close your doors and everybody's completely, you know, like when I think back to the very, very beginnings of it, we didn't even understand what was happening. You know, being in New York, that was the city that was hit first, and our team was afraid to go to work. And it was hard to ask them to do so, you know?
Yeah.
So we're glad it's over.
So then, okay. So we go from those unhappy times to the, you know, some of the unintended consequences. Take us through the steps from when you had to close the Riddler to now Une Femme Wines. I should be able to pronounce it better. I'm Canadian. My French stinks.
You're doing a great job. You're doing a great job.
I blame my grade 8 French teacher because I don't believe in personal responsibility when he can just blame someone else. But I'd love to hear that transition from the Riddler to what you're doing now.
Well, one of the things that was so cool about the Riddler was that all of our investors were women. So we had 33 investors in San Francisco, 40 in New York, all incredible women. And so that became a big part of our story and all of our social media and press coverage, and just really became a part of our community. And so many of our guests were women. They'd be getting together to celebrate something and to toast to a special moment, or just two gals getting together to catch up over a glass of champagne. And we would always feature women made wines on the list, and they were always incredibly popular. And guests would ask us all the time, how can I know that a wine is made by women or gives back to charities that benefit women or in any way like advances the cause when I'm out shopping at a restaurant or in a retail shop? And I was like, why is there not a brand for this? So we launched the brand really as our house wine at the Riddler. We teamed up with an incredible woman from Champagne, an organic grower producer named Julie Medvi from the Gonet Medvi Champagne family, and worked with her on a very special champagne collaboration. And that was our first wine in the suite of wines. And then we learned that just by looking at the numbers, that our top selling wines, no matter what day of the week or whether it was San Francisco or New York, were our sparkling rosés by the glass. And I couldn't find a sparkling rosé by the glass from California that was the right price, that wasn't too sweet, and that we really loved. And so I reached out to one of my favorite female winemakers in California, Samantha Sheehan from Poe and Ultraviolet. And we teamed up on the first version of the Cali, which is our sparkling rosé. And so from there, it has exploded.
Nice. Well, all right. So a lot of places to go with this. Do you find that was it hard to find female winemakers in Champagne? And I only ask this from what I've seen in my travels, that in the old world, it is more of a conservative thing when it comes to that it's, oh no, the men will eventually take over. While in North America or in Canada, I've certainly encountered more female winemakers. Did you have that similar experience?
You know, there are actually quite a few prominent female winemakers in Champagne, but they are definitely still a tiny minority. But there are women who are running huge Champagne houses. For example, the CEO of Krug is a woman. She's amazing. And then there are really cool grower producers all across the board, whether they've started their own Champagne house or they've taken over from their family. It was for so many generations extraordinarily patrilineal, but there's also a tradition of women in Champagne, specifically the Veuve Clicquot, who took over the Clicquot house after her husband passed away. And she really is the grand dame of all Champagne and really set the standard for women in the business.
You know, yeah, right. That's such a good point. I was right when you gave the answer that I thought of Veuve because I was in Germany and most of the places we went to, you know, the winemaking went from the father to the son, and that was much more the norm. But you're right, Champagne might be one of the areas where that pattern's certainly gotten broken, and we've seen the success of it. Tell people a little bit about the line of sparkling, the line of wines that you guys make.
So our core wines at the moment are our sparkling white and sparkling rosé, both from California. We have these wines available all across the US, and you'll be excited to learn that we are soon going to be launching in Canada.
Awesome.
Big news. Big news. Yeah. We're still working on all the details around exports and distribution, but that was a big goal of mine for this year. And we've had a lot of Canadian friends just over the border who are asking for the wines. So I'm so excited about it. We love Canada.
And you were kind of hinting at it before about wanting to try to find a sparkling rosé that was dry enough. You know, how important was that for you to have something that just, you know, lower residual sugar than maybe what you find in certain parts of California?
Yeah, absolutely. It's super important to me just from a taste profile perspective. It was also something that we saw with our guests at the Riddler over and over and over again. We were serving, you know, literally tens of thousands of guests a year. And I think people's palates have moved in the direction of looking for drier wines overall. You know, extra brut and zero dosage has become something that I think more consumers know about and are asking for. And certainly when you taste people on them, a lot of people tend to love the zippier, higher acid, lower sugar wines.
And they go so well with food. You know, I mean,
So well with food. Yeah, I mean, they're great with everything from fried foods like French fries and chicken fingers are obviously like two of the things that a lot of people love to pair champagne with, but also, you know, caviar and potato chips. But I love champagne with even with a burger or pizza. You know, I often like for people who are unaccustomed to drinking champagne with more casual foods, I always actually give them a reference of what do you like to drink beer with? Because beer and champagne have so many similarities. You know, they have great acidity. They are ice cold in most cases, especially that's typically how you want them. They've got that effervescence and they're light. And so you tend to pair them often with richer foods. And I truly can't think of a better day than my husband and I often go to, like when we go to fancy hotels, we'll order chicken fingers and fries and champagne for room service. And it's like truly the best.
That sounds awesome. You know, the problem is it's the word champagne or maybe even the word sparkling. It denotes this highfalutin, classy moment. You know, I got a monocle and spats and I'm going to, you know, in a full tux when really it can go well with barbecue. But the problem is, then you got greasy hands and a flute. You know, you got to find a way to demystify sparkling, and make it that this goes well with ribs.
Absolutely. Well, I drink my champagne and sparkling wines almost exclusively from traditional white wine glasses.
Yeah.
Opposed to flutes. You know, actually the CEO of Krug, I heard her speak once and she said, drinking champagne out of a flute is like going to the symphony with earplugs in, because all you can sense are the loudest notes.
Yeah.
And that always really stuck with me.
It's so true. I tell everyone all the time, when, you know, if I'm at someone's place and we brought champagne or sparkling or cremant or whatever, and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have any flutes. I'm like, good, I didn't want one anyway. Like,
yeah.
Normalize drinking sparkling in a normal wine cup or glass, and normalize with barbecue.
Agreed. We need to start a campaign. Yeah. It's starting here now.
Maybe not the most important campaign out there, but still one nonetheless.
Hey, we'd all be a lot happier if everybody got behind that.
Yeah, hell yeah, 100%. Well, let's dig in a little bit to you there, Jen. Where did your love of wine, of sparkling? I mean, if you're running, you know, successful champagne bars in Chicago and San Fran and New York, obviously that comes from a love of that product. Where did that all come from?
You know, from my earliest days living in New York in my young 20s, my girlfriends and I, we would go to the bar of whatever was like our great local restaurant. We used to go to a place called Schiller's all the time, which was owned by the same guy who owns Balthazar. And we would go to the bar and we would ask for a bottle of Prosecco and we would, you know, drink Prosecco all night long. And it really would make an evening feel like, you know, just a regular Tuesday night into a celebration.
Yeah.
And so that feeling of popping open a bottle of something bubbly and toasting with it and drinking with it, there's no other wine drinking experience that gets close. And over time, my palate really developed and I learned about traditional champagne method. I learned about all different styles of sparkling wines from across the world, different flavor profiles. I learned that Prosecco might be a little bit sweet for me at this point. You know, I like it sometimes, but in most cases, it's a little bit sweeter than I typically love. But it certainly got me in the door with sparkling when I didn't have the budget to drink champagne. And, you know, I started drinking the big champagne houses. So Veuve Clicquot, you know, if I ever had an opportunity to drink Dom Perignon at the time, those big houses. And then I learned about the smaller grower producers, the ones who are actually growing the grapes and vinifying the wines. And then through the Riddler, especially getting to taste champagnes from so many incredible producers throughout France that developed a real love for the style. And it's cool because champagne in particular, there are so many regulations as to what's allowed in terms of such a limited number of grape varietals that are allowed. Like the vines have to be tended to in very specific ways and at different height levels. And you can only harvest during certain days. And you know, the climate is so consistent in Champagne and versus what we do here in California, which is like whatever the heck we want.
Yeah.
You can make sparkling out of absolutely any varietal. You don't have to follow any rules about the ways in which you're farming your vines. And so we can do whatever we want here, which is fun.
Yeah, no, much more let your freak flag fly.
how
different is it now versus when you were in your 20s in New York? I mean, you obviously have a lot of connections with producers in California. How different is the sparkling industry now versus, you know, 20, 25 years ago?
What an interesting question. I think that consumers know a lot more about sparkling. It's also fascinating. We track the data through all different kinds of, you know, international reports. And champagne is still the fastest growing wine category worldwide. There is so much consumer love for and interest for champagne. And I would say, I think the biggest thing that I've noticed is that people are drinking champagne on many more occasions than they used to.
Right.
And also with food. And I think that that's largely, we have the sommeliers to thank because they all love champagne and sparkling so much, especially because of the high acidity. And I think that people have really evolved from just drinking champagne in a flute at a wedding or on New Year's Eve to realizing that it can be a part of their meal and in fact could even pair with many courses in their meal, if not the entire meal. And that it's also something, you know, that there has become some more readily available, like relatively approachable price point champagne. So you can drink it a little bit more commonly, I think, than people used to think.
And I think also some of what you're saying there goes to just having, you know, the internet and more information out there. People can seek it out. And as you mentioned correctly, you know, sommeliers telling that story over and over. And this is the broken record part of this conversation. But the one thing I always bring up is Cremant. You know, it's like, okay, it's not in champagne, but it's going to be $23 and it's going to be a lot better than an $18 Prosecco. Spend $5 more and you're going to have a great sparkling. I think that also helps. It's just there's more options out there now.
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without that. We'd love to bring a Cremant into the portfolio. So we're actively talking to additional female winemakers in France. Our goal is to launch another champagne this fall and then a rosé champagne next spring. But Cremant is definitely on our list as well.
You mentioned when just the popularity of the sparkling rosé. Just in general, that's another thing that's so different. When before it was mostly all just, you know, Blanc de Blanc, Blanc de Noir, and you know, and that was it. But the popularity of just, you know, still rosé and sparkling rosé is something where I see so much more of it on wine menus now than I did in my early 30s.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's I think there had been a perception that sparkling rosé was sweet, and you can get just as much beautiful acidity and dryness from a sparkling rosé too.
Yeah.
And I think also like rosé in general has gotten so popular, such a fun afternoon hang session kind of thing. I mean, being outside drinking rosé, whether it's still or sparkling, you know, call me, I'm there.
Oh yeah. And the great thing is you don't need to get the stuff where you're brooding. You just nice, simple red fruit. A lot of acidity, and it goes well with food, and it's perfect at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. All right, let's go back to you, because I just realized we're just geeking out on all the other stuff and not enough. What was the first year like for you with the new company? What was the first year like with InFem Wines?
So our first year, we launched in 2020 in February, Valentine's Day 2020, and then by March, the restaurants were all closed down, and that was a really, really tough year for me. Through closing down the restaurants, having to let go of our entire teams, having to connect with all of our investors to let them know that we were closing, just like the emotional taxing nature of all of COVID was just really, really tough. And then very sadly, my home in Sonoma County burned that August in a wildfire. Oh, wow. And it was a climate change related wildfire, and brought into like very stark relief for me the importance of sustainability and everything that's affecting the wine regions in particular. So very, very tough situation, but was definitely something that spurred some action on our side in terms of partnering up with some sustainability organizations and also just ensuring that our wines are produced as sustainably as possible. So yeah, it's a crazy experience, but like, I know so many people in the wine industry who've lost their homes, who've lost their wineries. And so that was a very foundational moment for me for sure. But then 2021 got a lot better. So 21 was great. 22 was great. Those years we started just growing a little bit more. We sort of found our place with a lot of great restaurants and wine shops that had started buying wines again and that were putting us on their lists. And then we were incredibly lucky and we had a chance to meet the team at Delta Airlines, and they loved the wines, and they ended up selecting our rosé in mini bottles for the planes for their breast cancer awareness month, which is October of every year. And so those wines went on all the planes in the US, which was wild. And then from there, we worked with them to develop a sparkling wine in cans. And I had never wanted to do a canned wine. I was not like a big canned wine enthusiast previously.
Yep.
But you can make good wines and put them in cans, and you can make, and you know, it's the same thing as in bottle. And so we produced a sparkling Pinot Gris for them. And that partnership has grown and grown and grown. And so now we're actually global partners to Delta. In about a year and a half, we've been able to grow with them, which has been amazing. And now we're on every plane in the world. And
that's so cool. That's a great line. That's a great sentence. And that's a great sentence from what you said 2.5 minutes ago. I mean, first off, good for you, Jen, for the perseverance. You launch a business a month later, COVID. Soon after that, you're closing your businesses. You lose your home to this horrible fire. And yet you persevered to where you are today. That in and of itself is a testament to you and, you know, your family, just, you know, your entire support team. Was there ever a moment when you were thinking, okay, I got to get away. I got to do something else. Trying to do this all like entrepreneurial thing is wildly heroic. And right now feels wildly too difficult.
I mean, every day I feel that. Talk to any founder or co-founder. I'm so, so, so lucky because I have an incredible co-founder who is my brother. And, you know, on the days when he wants to quit, I convince him to stay. And on the days I want to quit, he convinces me to stay. Yeah. So, no, but I mean, mostly it's incredibly fun. We have a great time. He's amazing. He leads everything that's behind the scenes. So everything on ops and finance and all of the compliance, which is so complex, in wine, and nobody gets into the wine industry to be like, you know, checking off compliance checklists. And I lead much more on the marketing and the sales side of things. But we're a great team. I'm so, so grateful for him. And, but I will say to anybody out there who's thinking about launching a wine brand or launching a company in general, yeah, it's tough every day, but hard things are hard. And, you know, you just keep going. And then you get to drink your wine on a plane on Delta and it feels pretty good.
How cool is that? I was gonna ask you that. How cool is that being on a Delta plane and someone asking, what would you like to drink? You're like, I'll have one of mine.
Yeah. Well, I always tell the flight attendants, oh, this is my wine. And they're like, yes, this is your wine. Like I handed it to you. And it's like, no, this is actually like, this is my company. And they're like, oh, you work for this company? That's so cool. Do you know that it's owned by a woman? And I'm like, yes, I'm the woman.
Must be cool.
It's pretty awesome. It's really fun to see photos all across social media of people taking pictures with the wines. And we see it obviously from lots of friends, but we also see it like from customers. And we have QR codes on the cans. So we get a huge amount of traffic to the website from people who are finding us on Delta, which is really cool.
Usually you save this for the end, but let's do it in the middle. Where's the website? People want to find more about your wines. Where do they go?
We're at unfemwines.com, and you can certainly order pretty much anywhere across the US. And then, as I said, we'll be coming to Canada soon.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
I
want to ask this question, but I'm going to say this off the top. Jen, you do not have to answer this, okay? You do not have to answer this question. You're coming to Canada. That's very exciting. I'm in Toronto, which is in Ontario. The letter O is at the end of LCBO. I don't know how much dealings you or your brother have had. How much fun is it trying to deal with the LCBO? And again, I'm going to give you an out. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to.
Well, you know, we're super lucky. We're working with a woman who is handling all of this for us. So we just send her the wines. And then from there, she lets us know what to do next.
Okay. So,
that is good. I haven't personally had any conversations directly with LCBO, but our broker does.
Okay.
So I can't even answer the question.
Perfect. That is fine. I can't tell you traveling across France, Italy, New Zealand, Germany, the one thing they all have in common. When I mention I'm from Ontario, some point the winemaker, the wine owner mentions the LCBO. I sheepishly say, I'm sorry, because I'm Canadian. And then we just move on with the tour. How great was it, Forbes? You were in the 30 under 30 for food and wine. And just curious, how cool was that? And how important was that for your business?
It was very, very cool. That was, now I'm 40. So it was a while ago, 10 plus years ago. I know that I was nominated by my former boss, Danielle Boulou, who is an amazing chef in New York from Restaurant Danielle. I worked for him as his research assistant and in a whole bunch of capacities in the kitchen and beyond. And so I was incredibly fortunate that he nominated me. And it's, I mean, it's an incredible group to be a part of and very, very grateful for the recognition. And I think those kinds of things are just important for highlighting talented young people. I wish they would do a 40 under 40 and a 50 under 50 and a 60 under 60.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But we'll let the young kids get the recognition for now.
Well, none of them can afford to buy a home anyway, so they might as well get
it. That's right. That's right.
Horrible, horrible economy. Where are you a great source from? Like, where? What's the philosophy in terms of that?
We source from really all across California. So for example, because we're producing so much for Delta, we have a policy with them, and it's actually their policy to us that all of our wines for them must be certified sustainable, mm-hmm. which is awesome. So that's something that we go out to growers and see who we can work with. So we're sourcing truly all from across California for that Pinot Gris. For our rosé and our white wine, actually our white wine just won double gold at the San Francisco Chronicle wine competition.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. And for that, we sourced our Pinot Noir and Chardonnay from mostly Anderson Valley and Mendocino.
Right.
We are always looking for partners who work as sustainably as possible. None of these sparkling wines are yet organic or biodynamic, but it's certainly something we're moving towards. It's obviously very expensive, but it's something that is really important to us. And so, it's something that we're always thinking about.
How tough is that sometimes, the relationship between yourself and the wine growers, the grape growers, excuse me, just because you're going to have your philosophy, they might share 85% of it, but then on some days it's raining a lot. So maybe that changes.
Oh yeah.
Like how tough is that to always maintain that positive relationship?
I think in general, most growers these days care a lot about sustainability and quality. And certainly that's what we're looking for. So I would say that hasn't been a particularly strong source of tension. I think with all of these things, like, you know, what I tell the sales team and what we talk about on the supply chain side and with our partners and all of these components are like, you'll find your people. Like, we're going to find the right end customers for what we're doing. They're going to find us at the right retailers and the right restaurants. Like, we're going to find the right partners. We're not going to be for everybody, and everybody's not going to be for us, but that's okay. Like,
yeah.
And I know that the people that we work with, we're always working to make sure that we're mission aligned and looking for people who want to do the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Very self-selecting that, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, you're not going to be getting with the wine growers that are going heavy on the chemical, you know.
Right.
Yeah. How difficult was it doing events, socially distanced events, especially during the time of COVID? I hosted wine events on Zoom, and I'm glad to have done it. I'm glad people enjoyed it, but, you know, it kind of sucks. But I wonder, what was it like for you?
I definitely did a lot of Zooms. A lot of retailers. We tried a lot of things like wine clubs, et cetera, when we were trying to keep the Riddler open. Wine tastings, wine education, all of those kinds of things. You know, I think that they worked for the time when everybody was craving being back together.
Yeah.
And now that we have the opportunity to all truly be back together, it's like so much better to be in person. But I'll tell you, our team is all remote. We started as a remote company and we remain a remote company. People are on our team are all across the US. And it's amazing because we've been able to bring on people onto the team who are incredibly talented, who we never would have met if we just had an office in San Francisco or Napa or New York. But it's tough because we haven't all been in a room together yet. And we're looking forward to doing that in April. I think everybody on the team has like met a bunch of other people on the team in person, but it is, you know, a new world where we all are a bit remote.
So if you all get together in April, that's 2 months away from now. Yeah. Have you already decided what you're going to pour? Have you been thinking about it?
We have like a whole committee on this.
That's a fun committee. I don't want to be on the LCBO committee. I want to be on the what we're going to pour in April committee.
That's right. Yeah, we're definitely going to do something Top Chef style in terms of a cooking competition. And then we're certainly going to be doing some blind tasting.
Yeah.
So it's going to be pretty fun.
Oh, that's going to be fun, but also horrible at once. There's nothing more that even the biggest expert will call Rioja Bordeaux from time to time.
We're definitely going to do some blind tastings of in which our wines will be included to see who can correctly identify our wines. I'm curious to see.
You're not going to like throw in some really factory made high sugar in the
of middle course. Of course, we're going to have people are going to rank and rate these wines. They're going to have to identify ours versus others. And then we're going to see what comes out as like the best wines, the worst wines. And then it's always so fun when you pull the paper bag off of them and everyone's shocked.
It's fun for some. So then if someone calls your highest end sparkling, they say, that's it. That's Un Fen wine. And it's Spumante Bambino. Will that person get fired immediately on the spot?
No, not immediate termination, but definitely. I hope it's not me. I'll tell you that.
Oh, no. It's like everyone out of the party. The party's over. It's done.
That's right. It's done.
So what, I mean, obviously the amount you've accomplished since 2020 till now is pretty remarkable. Not saying you're going to accomplish all of that more the next 3 years, but what for you are the next goals over the next 1, 3, 5 years for your company?
Absolutely. Well, one big thing is we are looking at international. So certainly Canada is high on our list, and we're also looking in Asia. So Japan and Korea being our top two goals in Asia. Apparently there's a huge level of interest in California sparkling wines in both Japan and Korea. And I selfishly also want to travel there. So, you know, so that's a big area of focus for us. We are always looking for ways to uplift and celebrate women. And last year we launched a program called the Hall of Femme, where we sent crates of our wines to 365 women in the year who had shattered glass ceilings in some way. And so the crate had a piece of tempered glass on the top, and then they could smash the ceiling to get to the glass, which was amazing.
That's cool.
So this year we're evolving that program a little bit to be focused around getting women to gather together in a project we're calling Project Gather. And our goal is to encourage and be somehow a part of, in the year of 2023 gatherings of women across the country. Because we do believe that when you get women together, really amazing, incredible things happen. And so the women who will be a part of this will be able to go onto our website and order like a gather guide that will include wines and then sort of prompts and questions to stir up interesting conversations. So that's a huge project that we're launching. And then, as I said, we're also launching champagne this year and rosé champagne next year.
That's cool.
I'd like, you know, I have a couple of key accounts I want to be in. So I really want to be in Yankee Stadium, and I really want to be in the White House. So, you know,
we only have four minutes left here. First off, Yankee Stadium, is this because you're from New York? Are you a Yankee fan?
I'm not really a Yankees fan, but I could be. Yeah. To me, it's so iconic, and yeah. I'm really bullish on high quality wines at stadiums and arenas. I think that as a woman, when I go, like we go to the Warriors games all the time here in San Francisco, and there's like not really wine I want to drink. So I don't think that there's any reason why our wines can't be in these places. So we're definitely going to do some arenas, I think, this year. Obviously that's like a lot of wine at scale, but we're able to do it for Delta. So we should be able to do it for arenas too.
Yeah.
So Yankee Stadium to me is just like so iconic. We would love to be at the Met in like the Metropolitan Opera in New York. And then the White House, like, of course we should be pouring at the White House.
Hell yeah. I love it. By the way, if you're ever in Toronto, the Scotiabank Arena where the Raptors and the Maple Leafs play, the head sommelier, Ann Martin, I had on the podcast. It'll be released before this interview is released. Now my time's got all mixed up. And she's the head somm there. And the wines we have at that arena are some of the best in the world. So
that's, you know, so cool.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's amazing. I would love to connect with her. I'll drop you a note. Oh, yeah. If we get the deal, I'll take you to however many games you want to go to.
Hey, listen, Jen, this has been fantastic. Again, congratulations. I knew a bunch about your story and everything, but just from going where you did in 2020 to now flying on a plane and saying, that's mine, to your eyes set on Yankee Stadium. It's a cool story, and I wish you nothing but continued success. And again, before we end this, give the website, tell people where to go.
So we're at www.unfemwines.com. And we're also at Unfem Wines on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on TikTok, all of the above. Right. So we'll see you there. But yeah, we love connecting with amazing women, and we get a lot of fun, random emails through our website about people wanting to collaborate or team up in some ways. So we're always happy to do so.
Thank you so much, Jen.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.